Good morning, everybody. It's great to be with you. We really enjoyed our time here in Red Bluff. We really like your weather, although it doesn't sound like the summer is such a good deal from what we've heard. It sounds like summer would be a good time to come visit Chicago because summers in Chicago are quite nice. But we really enjoyed being here and being with you, and everybody's very friendly to us, which is pretty nice, treating the big city folks so nice. We really appreciate that. So what I want to do today is something a little different, because normally on a Sunday morning in our churches, we'd preach from the Bible and we talk about what does the Bible tell us about life. But today I'm not really going to preach from the Bible. I'm just kind of a coaching talk with you all, if you can indulge me a little bit. And I want to talk to you about what happens when we're not in church on Sunday morning, which is like most of our lives, right? Most of your life, you're not sitting where you're sitting just now. You're doing something else. And you don't stop being the church just because you're not sitting in these chairs. You're the church tomorrow and Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday and Friday and Saturday. You are the church scattered throughout Red Bluff and all the surrounding communities that are around here, at your work or at your school or in your neighborhood and at the park and out on this fishing stream. I hear there's fishing around here. Wherever it is, you're the church in those places. And God wants us to, as the church in all those places, be pointing people towards Jesus, to the idea that Jesus is alive and he loves them and he cares about them and he wants to give them hope and a future. And that's what we want to be about. But we want to do it in a way that's like not too weird. We have this phrase in the Vineyard that we say we want to be naturally supernatural. So we want to be supernatural people because Jesus is alive. Like he's in the world. And if he is, then supernatural things happen. But we don't want to be any more weird about it than we have to be. Like we want to be natural. We want to be like ordinary people. We want to be normal people in the midst of being supernatural. And so what I want to talk to you about today is how do you be naturally supernatural the rest of the week in the marketplace, like at your school, at your job, wherever it is that you're spending your week. How do you be naturally supernatural there? And to start with, there's five things that you kind of need to know about the people who are not in church. Okay, the people who like aren't kind of part of the family, or at least not yet. So the first thing you need to know is everybody needs a pastor or a chaplain. The atheist, the skeptic, the Buddhist, whatever it is, whatever they say they are, whatever they're doing, the hedonist, the party guy, whoever it is, they all need a pastor. Now, they're not going to say, I need a pastor. That's not what it is. But what they all need is somebody who, has their back, cares about them, will stand beside them when they're in trouble, will notice when they're having a bad day, somebody who will pray for them, somebody who will care about their family and their lives and their ups and their downs and their future. They all need that person. And you'd be surprised how hard that is for them to find. They don't actually, most of the time, have that person. It's really hard for them to find. So that's the first thing. They all need a pastor. excuse me. I don't know what the deal is. I was fine until I got up here. Anyway, about 10 years ago, my wife and I downsized. We sold the house that we raised our kids in because it was empty most of the time. And it just seemed like we don't want to keep this house. And besides which, I don't want to keep shoveling snow. So he moved into a condominium. And it's a building with like 10 units in it. And the way a condominium works, I haven't seen much of what looks like condominiums around here. Do you have condominiums? Somebody, one person lives in a condominium. You know, it's kind of like you have this building that you own together and you have a condominium board. Well, they made me the president of the board because I was the oldest person on the board and I was the one person who could get along with everybody. And what's happened is when they're in trouble, like they're talking to me. They're like coming to me. I'm like their pastor. You know, they've ended up, you know, a couple of times, you know, I've had people from the building in my living room crying about whatever's going on, and they're like telling me because they know I'm a safe person to tell. That's what everybody needs. They all need somebody like that. The second thing you need to know about people, everybody needs to feel loved by God. That's like our deepest human need, to feel like we're loved. And especially loved by God. We need to feel like we're loved from other people, but of course you can't guarantee the future with other people. You know, they may be here today, but you can't guarantee anything about tomorrow. But with God, it's all guaranteed. Nothing changes. So everybody needs to feel loved by God. The third thing, everybody prefers to be with people who listen rather than people who try to persuade, you know. So if somebody's trying to persuade you, it always feels like a salesman. And most of the time, that means instant hang up. It's like those calls you get on your phone, you know. The gazillion call about, you know, you've won a prize, you know, to the resort. All you have to do is pay us $100,000 and you can stay for a night a year or whatever it is. You know, it's sort of like, that's how we react. But who people want to be with are the people who listen, which tells us something maybe about what mode we should be in if we want to connect with people. Like, if you want to change Red Bluff, you're going to have to be the best listeners in Red Bluff. Okay, number four. Many people have experiences they can't explain. This is sort of like one of the big hidden secrets about the non-church world, is that people in the non-church world have spiritual experiences. Lots of them. Many of them. They have lots of spiritual experiences, and they don't tell anybody because they don't want to be weird. But they actually have experiences, all kinds of things. And a lot of times they don't know what it means. Like, what does it mean that this thing happened to me? But we can tell them what it means. It means Jesus is alive and Jesus cares about you, you know? And so a lot of people have experiences. And so, like, if you're at a party or some event with a bunch of the non-church people, one of the fun things you can do is, like, let's tell about the inexplicable experiences that we've all had, like telling ghost stories, except real ones, you know. Tell us about the strange things that have happened in your life. If you can get them to cooperate, it'll be quite revealing and interesting. And lastly, number five, sometimes the most hostile person to faith is the one that's closest to coming to faith. You know, I grew up in Montana. We have a lot of strange sayings in Montana. And one of them was, if you throw a rock, the dog that yelped is the one that got hit. Okay, so you have to kind of grow up in a place where there's like wolf packs or something like that to understand that saying. But the idea is the person that's like pushing back, the person that's hostile, the person that's like ragging on you, giving you trouble, criticizing you for your faith or for coming to church on Sunday morning, whatever, a lot of times the reason they're doing that is because it's getting under their skin. And they're like that close. Like, they're feeling Jesus breathing down their neck, and they're thinking, boy, I got to get this pushed away, or I might, like, be one of them. You know, and so they're fighting it. And so when you get that person in your life, it seems like they just pick you out and they just start picking on you. That's the one you should pray for the most. And that's the one you should be extra good at listening to and caring for, because they're actually closer than you think. One of the interesting things that happened to us this last year is there was a young teenage guy from a Muslim family. We have a lot of immigrants in Chicago who came to Jesus. And he's a teenager. He's like 16. And he just went completely all out for Jesus. Like when he met Jesus, he really met Jesus. And so he had a teacher at school that figured this out, and she just made a point of saying something negative to him about his faith every single day. Some little aside, some little thing. She was just picking on him day after day, just giving him trouble. So one day he stayed after school to talk to her, and they're not having a very productive conversation at the beginning. And as they're talking, the cleaning lady comes through the room. So, and, you know, in Chicago, most of the cleaning ladies are speaking Spanish. And this lady comes through, and he looks at her, and he says to the teacher, that cleaning lady has she's got a problem with her back. Her back's hurting her right now. He just like knew from God that this was happening. And that she said, oh, don't give me that. And then he said, ask her. So she asked the cleaning lady. The cleaning lady said, yeah, my back's hurting me a whole lot. She says, Jesus wants to heal her. And then he said, and he's going to use you. You're going to pray for her. And believe it or not, that teacher put her hand on that cleaning lady's back and felt the power of God go through her hand and heal that lady's back right there on the spot in the classroom. Not him, but her. Because he understood the reason she's pushing is because she's actually closer. You see what I mean? So if you can keep those in mind, that gives you a leg up. So with those five things in mind, how do you get started being naturally supernatural in the marketplace? And the obvious first thing is just like get involved, be connected, do the things that other people do. You know, go on the fishing trip, be in the bowling league, you know, join the club, whatever it is that's happening, the community group, whatever the thing is, the businessmen's association. You know, whatever you all do in Red Bluff, like, be a part of it. Like, get involved. Be one of the people that people can count on and get connected with people. When you get there, number two, be the chaplain of wherever you are. Now, that doesn't mean print up business cards. Don't print up business card, you know. I'm Sally, chaplain, and hand it out at you know, don't do that. Don't, like, tell them. Just like act like it. Just start being their chaplain, being their pastor, like taking care of them, looking out for them, praying for them, noticing when they're in trouble, when they're noticing when they're having a bad day, praying for their work, you know, all kinds of things. You know, you'd be surprised how much God can do in business. You know, I've coached a lot of businessmen in my church, and a lot of times they have people problems. And you know what? We got lots of wisdom about people problems. You know, we know we can pray and get wisdom from God. So be the chaplain at work with those people. And you know what? When they have spiritual questions, which inevitably happens to everybody at some point, guess who they're going to ask? They're going to ask you. All right? So be a chaplain. Number three, pay attention to people and ask them questions about their life. Like, have just a little curiosity that you're going about people and how they're doing or what's going on with them. So a couple of years ago, something happened with our youth pastor. He does this thing. We do this thing where we have rock shows for teenage garage bands at our church because they don't have any safe places to play for their friends. So we thought, well, we can get them in the church and build a relationship with these kids by offering them a place to do a sort of rock band concert for their garage bands, and they can play for all their friends, and we've got a sound system, and we've got lights, and that's great. And we get a policeman who's out in the parking lot to kind of keep the shenanigans out there down a little bit. And the parents love it because it's the safest place for their kids to pursue their band interest. And so one day, one of the moms, her son was just getting involved in the rock show thing, called us up just to check us out and make sure we're not a cult or something. And so she's talking to the youth pastor, and he started asking her questions. Like, you know, well, tell me about your family, and where do you guys live, and how are you doing? And as he starts asking her, she says, well, you know, I really am feeling pretty terrible today. Like, I got this, it was something like a headache or something. I got a headache, and I can't shake it, and I took this medicine. It's not working. And he said, well, how about if I pray for you? And it's sort of like, what? Yeah, how about if I just pray for you on the phone right now? Well, oh, okay. So he prays for her. And they kind of wrap up the conversation. That's the end of it. But the next day, she calls him up. She says, you know, after you prayed for me, all the pain went away. She says, you need to come and pray for my sister. She's really sick. Like, she's got all kinds of things wrong with her, and the doctors can't figure it out. And like, you know, can we set up a time for you to come and pray for my sister? Because, like, she's desperate. She says, okay. So they set up a time, and he gets together with them. There these two ladies are. You know, and sister's got, you know, a laundry list of sicknesses. And so he picks one, prays for it, she gets a little bit better, but then they both start saying, you've got to come with us to the hospital. And it's on the opposite side of town. It's like, Chicago's a big place. It's, you know, a city, and then it's surrounded by 176 suburbs, you know, so it was like an hour away. So to do this, his whole day is going down the drain. But they said, what happened was, they said, our nephew's in the hospital. He's 19, and he got hit by a train this morning as a pedestrian, not in his car, but walking. And he's in intensive care, and they say there's no brain function, and they're calling all the family to come because at the end of the afternoon, they're going to pull the plug. You got to come with us. So what could he say? Like, there was nothing he could do. He came with them. He gets out there, and it's just like the worst you could imagine. You know, here's this kid all banged up, it looks really bad. The family's all there, they're all sobbing and crying and everything, and they tell him, you know, you got 5 minutes. You can come in for 5 minutes. So he just like says, well, let's all join hands, and they all join hands. None of these people are from church. And he just prays for God to be with them. Really, I don't know what he was, he can't really remember what he prayed, actually. He just prayed something, you know, God, please be here, please help these people in this terrible situation. And then he left. And the next day, they called him up again. They said, you know, 15 minutes after you left, he started looking around the room. And within an hour, he was like trying to communicate. He had a breathing tube down his throat, so he couldn't talk. But, you know, he was trying to communicate. And so, like, they didn't pull the plug. Like, something started happening. And so we had another Vineyard church in that part of town. So we called them up and we said, there's this guy in the hospital over there. Can you start sending people over there to pray for him? Because we think God's healing him. And so they started sending people over there every day for a couple of weeks to pray for him. And I want you to know that like a month, 2 months later, pretty soon, within 2 months, that 19-year-old kid came walking and talking to visit our youth pastor and thank him for praying for him. Now, the interesting thing is it all started by just saying, well, like, tell me about your family. Just a simple little thing. It's like you pull on this thread, and this that leads to this, which leads to this, which leads to this, which leads to this. And he ended up, that's the closest thing we've ever had to a resurrection in our church. Like, I call it our near resurrection, because they hadn't actually declared him dead, so it doesn't, technically doesn't quite count. But he was as good as dead. Near resurrection. So, ask questions. Four, when you talk to people, don't talk to them about religion. Nobody wants to talk about religion. Like, the only way to be worse is, like, talking about politics. Like, don't talk to them about religion. Talk in terms of love and relationship. You know, all the things that we actually believe, it's about love and relationship. It's all about two big things. This is what Jesus told us. Here is the whole Bible summed up. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. That's the whole deal. It's all about love. So when you talk to people about what you're doing or what you believe, when you talk to them, talk about love. That it's all about love. It's all about loving God, loving our neighbors. And it just changes the whole conversation when you do that. It's not about, you know, well, I believe this, and well, you know, we don't believe that, or that church, or this church. Just talk about love and relationship. Number five, keep it simple. Keep it simple with people. Don't introduce complicated theological questions, you know, that you don't need to, that they're not necessarily asking, you know, free will and God's predestination, or, you know, how many days or how long did it take God to do creation, you know, or any of those kind of questions. You don't have to answer all those questions on the front end. Keep it simple. It's really all about Jesus. The way I talk about it with people in my church is we want to talk to people about Jesus first. What they need first is to know Jesus. And all the other bits, all the other stuff comes later. They need to know Jesus first. So keep it simple. Keep it focused on Jesus. Number six, take risks when the opportunity's there. So there are going to be times when you're at work or you're walking down the street or you're at school or whatever it is that you're doing, when something's going to happen and you have to decide, am I going to step out and take the risk of being embarrassed in order to do something naturally supernatural? And what I want to encourage you to do is, like, to go for it, to give it a try. And I'll tell you another story to kind of give you what I mean. So about 3 weeks ago, one of the kids in our youth group, he's 17, is on the bus on his way home from school. And as he gets on the bus and walks by the bus driver, he feels like God says to him, the bus driver is having a lot of pain in his right knee. And he said to God, I'm not going to do that. In front of all my friends and all the kids on the bus. And he just kept, it just keeps coming back. He just keeps feeling it. And so he says to God, if all the other kids get off the bus and it's just me and the bus driver, then I'll do it. At the next stop, all the other kids got off the bus. So he goes up to the bus driver and says, you know, are you having trouble with your right knee? Because I think God told me that you're having trouble with your right knee. And the guy said, well, yes, I am. And he goes into this whole thing about the troubles he's been having with his right knee and how much pain he's in trying to drive this bus with this right knee problem. And he prays for the guy. The pain leaves the bus driver. And then they spend 45 minutes with him talking to the bus driver about Jesus. So you're just taking a risk. Like, and you know, a lot of times what's happening is we think, what if it's wrong? What if it's not God, right? That's our first question. What if it's not God? If it's not God, you're going to look like a weirdo. But that's as bad as it gets, you know? And at least you're trying and you seem to care about them. But my question to you is, what if it is God? And you don't do it? Like, what if it is God and you didn't do it? That's a lot worse. That's a whole lot worse. You can endure a little embarrassment to take the risk. And you know what? Most of the time, you won't be embarrassed. You know, most of the time, you'd be surprised how often those kinds of things, those situations end up being God. So take the risk. Be ready to try when it's inconvenient. So, you know, a lot of times the best opportunities never happen when it's going to be easy. It's always like when you're on the way to something where there's some other impediment, you know, there's too many other kids on the bus, it's whatever it is, you know, there's some inconvenience factor, and you have to be ready to try in the face of that, like to work through it. One of our pastors, his family has never really approved of his being a pastor and of his faith. And in particular, his stepmom has been historically quite hostile. So last Christmas break, they're visiting the family, and they'd gone out to a restaurant. And while they're at the restaurant, a friend of his parents calls them up and talks to them. And as they hang up, they're talking about their friend and talking about how this friend has been struggling with a severe health problem. And he says, well, why don't we just stop by her house on the way home, and I'll pray for her. And the inconvenience factor, of course, is that if he does that, his parents get drug into it. He says, just call her up and see if we can just stop by on the way home. And his stepmother was like, no, we don't want to do that. But the dad, like, picks up the phone and calls her. And she says, yes, please come by. And so the stepmom's all grumpy because now she can't get out of it. They just got the one car. She's stuck. She has to go with them. They made this commitment to their friend. So they go there. They sit down in the living room and, you know, arms crossed. Here we are. He prays for this lady. The lady's healed on the spot. And they watched the whole thing happen. And this is what the stepmom says. It just felt like the room was so full of love. It was like a sea change in the whole relationship. And it was really convenient because, like, you're interrupting the whole deal. It just seems like, you know, well, this isn't the convenient way to do it. But when you kind of take the chance in the face of it, God does stuff. Number 8, don't let worry about perceptions or that the fact that the people might not have anything in common with you stop you from trying. One of our problems in terms of changing our communities and being God's people during the week is that we look at people and we think, well, they're not like me, and so we rule them out. We think, well, they would never want to hear about Jesus, so we don't tell them. Or they would never want to talk to me, so we don't talk to them. You know, we just assume things about people and where they are that may or may not be true. And you have to decide that you're not going to rule out anybody. Like, whoever they are, no matter where they are, no matter how different they are from you, you just have to decide, like, they all need Jesus and they all need a pastor. They all need to be loved, and I'm going to be a part of it. I'm going to at least give them the chance, no matter what. So about 10 years ago, we had one of our church plants went up to Seattle to start a new church. And they brought a whole bunch of young people with them. And one of them was this 19-year-old guy. He transferred school so he could go on the church plant deal, got into a school up in Seattle. He's 19 years old, and One of the things he did for the church plant was he played the electric guitar in the band. And he's 19. So you know right up front, electric guitarists like their music loud anyway. And when they're 19, even more so. And so there, he's living with some friends in this big apartment building, you know, high-rise kind of apartment building. And they move in there, and there's these two 70-year-old ladies that are living above them. So you just know what's going to happen. In no time at all, you know, he's practicing his electric guitar at way too loud a volume in the apartment building. And the two ladies upstairs are getting irritated. And so they come down to complain about the noise. Now, here's the thing. The way they were doing the church plant was they were having like a party that they were inviting people to every other week. Just, you know, every possible excuse to have a party. So, you know, if the Seattle sports team was in the finals or something, then that's the party. And if it's, you know, the 4th of July, then that's a party. And if it's a middle of the winter, then that's a party. And, you know, just every possible excuse for a party they were doing. So this 70-year-old lady comes down to complain to the 19-year-old kid about his noise. And he invites her to the party. He didn't rule her out. He invites her to the party. And I think maybe it had been a really long time since some good-looking young guy had asked her to anything. So she and the other lady come to the party. And they meet all these young people, and there's nobody else even close to their age. Nobody even close. But they had a good time. And so they invited them to the next party. And then they invited them to the next party. So then the ladies started figuring out, like, you guys are all, like, together. Like, what is it? Well, we're all part of this church. Well, am I allowed to come to the church? You know, they basically invited themselves. Can we come to the church? Because we like you guys. You're all from this church. Can we come? They said, sure, you can come. So they started coming. After a couple of months, lady number one gives her life to Jesus. A month later, the other one does. Gives her life to Jesus. Then it turns out, guess what? They were an old lesbian couple that had been living together for all these years. And Jesus completely changed their life. And you know what? Most of us would have ruled them out. We would never have talked to them. We'd have said, oh, they'd never want to come to our party. They'd never want to come to our church. They'd never want Jesus. We just assume. Don't rule anybody out. Don't rule anybody out. All right. Number 9, follow up with people and remember their details. Like, just, you know, we all like it when people remember our names, when people remember, you know, if they tell you about their mom who's sick, like the next time you see them, say, how's your mom doing? It just means so much when you just kind of have that simple follow-up. Like, how's your mom doing? Or how'd that job promotion go? Did you get the promotion? Did you solve the problem? You know, did you pass the test? Maybe it's school. Whatever it is, you know, you come back and, like, follow up with them. How did it go? And it starts to form a caring relationship. And then finally, invite them to stuff, but don't preach. Like, you don't need a megaphone. You really don't. You don't need to, like, get out to you know, and kind of be a preacher in that sense to, like, bring people to Jesus. All you got to do is invite them. Invite them to your stuff. Invite them to the adult bowling, which I don't understand. What makes bowling adult? You're just trying to say don't bring your kids? Okay. Oh, I see. Okay, I was just thinking, adult bowling, what do they do? Anyway, you know, like, just invite people to adult bowling. They'll be curious. Invite them to your stuff. You know, let them come in here. They'll say, like, a pastor who looks like Luke? that'll be interesting. You know, like, that. We got to figure this out because that doesn't make any sense to us. And boom, you know, the thing is that when they start hanging out with us, you do know that we're contagious, right? Or really, it's Jesus that's contagious, but we're contagious. Like, if they start hanging out with us and relating to us and being with our stuff, they're going to find Jesus, or Jesus is going to find them, however you want to think about it. But they're going to catch what we got, is what's going to happen. And their lives are going to be changed. The next thing you know, they're going to be getting baptized up here. And is that going to be a sweet day, right? So all of that is to say, you can do this, folks. You can do this. You're just getting started. You can do this. And who knows what can happen in Red Bluff if you do. All right, Luke.